Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, guilty movie pleasure fans of all ages, we hearken back to a time where filmmaking was more innocent, and a time where the good guys were good and the bad guys were bad, and by golly did we fight the Nazis, because look, it's a bird, it's a plane, no, it's the Rocketeer!
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Guilty Movie Pleasure.
Not a bad improvised intro, if I do say so myself.
Well done, Ben Baker.
It was the greatest intro in the history of intros.
Mark it.
It was the greatest. There were crowds that got up and cheered for me at that intro. In fact, the security's still letting them in. They're still letting the thousands in to see my intro.
You see, I saw something about how where he said there were 15,000 people there, and someone was like, Fire Marshal says only 5,000 people fit in that venue. Which is
great. Anyways, fair warning, since they do fight Nazis in this, and our president befriends Nazis, there might be a few political jokes, but we'll try and rein it in, because we don't want to become...
Listen. I don't feel like it's controversial to say that I don't like Nazis.
Yeah, I don't think so.
So I think that's where we're gonna leave.
I like the comment on YouTube when it said "Don't punch women, Ben Begley." Yeah, yeah. And I was like, I can stand by that.
I definitely support that statement.
Don't punch women. I did find that clip of Nick Cage that you were talking about.
Oh yeah, where he just punches
punching
all the
several different women in The Wicker Man.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
We should maybe do that on. I've never seen it.
The Wicker
we should
Man.
Maybe do that.
I've
on
only
show.
Seen those clips. Can we just do those
just the clips? That we're probably better off that way.
So I can't pull any sound clips for that one.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking The Rocketeer today. And hey, oh, by the way, I'm at the Ben Begley. My real name is Ben Begley. My first name is not at the, middle name Ben and last name Begley. But you can find me at the Ben Begley and find us at Guilty Movie Guys. And with me, as always, is Jesse McIntosh.
Yeah, I have actually officially changed my name to at Too Much Jesse.
It's good. It's better.
Yeah, so my Twitter handle is Jesse McIntosh. My real name is at Too Much Jesse.
And when you have a kid, you should maybe think of the first name being hashtag.
That's smart. I'm glad I haven't had a first kid yet.
Hashtag so, Baby Macintosh. Yeah.
Hashtag Baby Mac. Baby Mac?
Baby Mac. Yeah, there you go.
That's good.
There you go.
Big
See,
Mac
we just
and
figured
Baby
it out.
Mac.
So we're talking The Rocketeer today, and we have God, this music just inspires me. Mm. I hadn't seen this movie since I was a kid. I did see it in theaters, and I love this. I remember how obsessed I was when I saw Back to the Future 2 and how obsessed I was with a hoverboard, but this topped my obsession.
Sure.
Where I still think... That even though this takes place in the past, I still think we haven't arrived as a future society until we have jetpacks. Because imagine if you could jetpack to an audition or jetpack to work, minus the potential exploding and,
sure.
and limbs. And
it feels dangerous.
But it's also
but
would feel
if it,
awesome.
But if they got it to a point where it wasn't dangerous, where
yes.
we could have more than one person with a jetpack.
Yeah, right now I don't even trust LA drivers, let alone
no,
LA jetpackers.
They're difficult. You know what I've started doing in the car instead of honking at people? I've started giving them a round of applause. It's like a real passive-aggressive move, and I just always hope that someone, like, cuts me off and then looks back, like, hoping that I'm okay. And I just, like, give him a real slow clap.
I give thumbs up, and that pisses people off.
Yeah.
I remember seeing this as a kid, and I loved it. I thought it was a great adventure film. I liked. I remember being like, oh, it's cute, because there's great romance in it, there's adventure, there's a great villain. It also had some of the darkest things I had seen as a kid by then. This came out, I should know this already. Why is it always so hard to find the date on the back of a...
I feel like 91?
Blu-ray box.
91?
91. Nailed okay, it. So I was Nailed 9 years old at the time.
Yeah.
And to see a dude when Bigelow, Otis Bigelow is his name, when he's found snapped in half, even though it's just his shoe up here, the image of that in my head haunted me. And I remember the big, scary dude freaking me out as a kid, but I also loved it because he gets blown up in the end. And then, I know I'm skipping way ahead, but I already... tweeted the gif of this. Timothy Dalton might have one of my favorite villain deaths. And he actually has my favorite villain death in any kids movie ever, but potentially top 10 of all movies.
Wow.
I love the jetpack exploding and him blowing
him
up the Hollywood land sign.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's and him just like, oh, because first it's like, oh shit, oh god, ah! And then he turns into like a full-on supernova, like a meteor. Now, supernova is when a star collapses on itself, but he becomes a meteor.
A solar eclipse, I think, is what you're
meaning. Yeah, yeah. I didn't get to see it because I'm an idiot and didn't my glasses
I know,
in time.
Me neither.
I did a selfie of it, and it reflected through my camera onto my chin.
Ooh.
So that was something. I didn't know it until I posted it and somebody pointed it out.
So you're part of it.
I was part of it.
You're part of history, Ben.
Oh, hey, I do want to give a real quick shout out before we go on. The Lonely Island guys have been talking about coming on the show when their schedule permits, and I went and saw Brigsby Bear today in theaters. If you haven't heard of this movie, ignore all trailers, because I haven't even seen a trailer. I just went in blind, and the journey it takes you on is so fun and so imaginative and quirky. It's like a grown-up Lonely Island movie. Not that I don't love their other... I love their other movies, but this is such a profoundly quirky, fun, heartwarming movie that has some hilarious moments, but just it made me want to make movies, like, right now. And I can't say enough good things about this movie. You should go check it out. It's in limited release right now. So go support it because it's a great independent film. And go see that instead of, you know, Annabelle 7 or whatever. Yeah. That's my shout-out. Or It.
Actually, I'll see It. But I'll see that later.
See Brigsby Bear.
Listen, I'm going to see Brigsby Bear in spite of my fear of bears.
In spite of your...
Yeah, I'm going to see it. I'm going to power through, and I'm going to see the film.
I can't... It's hard for me to talk about it because I don't want to give anything away. Because literally, I went in not knowing, and I'm like, ooh, is this like a post-apocalyptic thing? Ooh, what is this? And then it takes you on this bizarre journey, I don't want to give anything away.
The trailer that I saw had no dialogue in it. And
oh,
it was
really?
Just it was very visual, yeah.
It's incredibly shot. Kyle Mooney.
It was six clips of Nicolas Cage punching
that's it.
Women. It was very strange.
I will say, Kyle Mooney, he's always been hysterical on Saturday Night Live, but he plays such an earnest, awkward character that is tough. You and I know how tough being comedically awkward is.
Yeah.
How it's very easy to hit the gas on that. And his character is so unique and so grounded and real. I don't want to spend the entire show gushing about this movie, but please, if you see Brigsby Bear, tweet at me, tweet at the Lonely Island guys, let them know that I told you to go see it and that it's a fantastic film.
I will say, and not to get too far off the Rocketeer, which is what we're talking about today.
Oh,
but
are we?
I
thought
went,
it was Brigsby Bear.
Yeah, well, we can talk about it, even though I haven't seen it. I went to college... to a university with Sir Kyle Mooney.
Yeah.
And my lasting memory of Kyle was there were two improv teams at the time, and he was in one of them, and he would always come to the other team's show to, like, support improv on campus. And they did short form, so they'd ask for probably 10 suggestions throughout the show. And every time they asked for a suggestion, Kyle Mooney in the back would just yell out names of baseball players from the late 1980s, early 1990s, and he just had a fucking Rolodex, and he just went through every single play. It was amazing. But that's my memory problem. So there you go.
He's fantastic. Go see it. Let me know if you go see it. You should just go right now. Stop listening. Come back. Press pause. Yes. Anyways, back to The Rocketeer. So I was nervous about rewatching this because I've had certain movies, like when I rewatched Mortal Kombat, it's terrible now.
Yeah.
Rewatching this, yes, it feels kind of like a kid's movie, but that's okay. It for me, it has enough darkness and enough heroics and enough adventure that I kind of wish more kids movies were like this nowadays. And I just got swept up in it. I remember last night I started it at like 11 and I was tired and I was like, I'll probably watch like an hour. And then cut to, I watched the entire thing and I go up and I wake my wife up and I'm like, I'm just filled with so much joy right now. And she's like, yeah, I'm filled with trying to fucking sleep, all right? And I'm like, sorry. It was just like...
She hasn't gotten a full night's sleep in like...
It's an amazing adventure.
7 months, and you're like, I love The Rocketeer.
Well, I have to wake her up just so she can feed our daughter. So that's why I was like, oh, by the way, go feed her daughter. And the movie was great. But so I loved it. I think it ages really well. I don't think that... It was hard for me when I was watching it. I was like, There's hard... I don't want to like even pick apart the movie.
Sure.
Because it's such a fun adventure, and the one word would be a sense of wonder the whole movie gives you, this, like, whimsical adventure you go on.
Yeah.
It's like Indiana Jones light, like
a little
one
bit.
Of our fans.
Yeah,
said.
It was interesting. Like I was telling you before we started, I saw it when I was younger, when I was a young kid, and I remember loving it, but I didn't remember anything about it. And it seemed to me, going back, that there was less rocketeering.
Less racketeering than I remember. Yeah.
I remember most of the movie was just him flying around in the jetpack. And for some reason, I also remember him running out of fuel. Like, they even made the mention at some point of, like, you don't even know how much fuel this
Apparently
has.
Apparently, it's limitless.
It can go forever because they never refueled. But but regardless, like, I had, for some reason, I had a memory of him, like, running out of fuel and like hanging on to the side of a plane. And but that was just, he did that on purpose.
Yeah,
that
well, an and I think it was still when he was trying to figure out how to.
It must have been. It was either that or like the blimp type aircraft that he was on.
Yeah. So did you get a kick out of it still? What's your adult cool, perspective man. Of it?
I thought it was a lot of fun. It was very Disney.
Oh yeah.
And it like there was never any doubt as to what was going to happen, and there was never any doubt as to like how it was going to happen, really.
But do you
but
agree,
it was still
though,
fun. Like, it was a fun journey.
Do you agree, though, that, like, compared to what would be a PG kids movie nowadays, some of the villain stuff gets kind of dark, right?
The whole thing is kind of dark. Like,
yeah.
I can't imagine a kids movie now being set just pre-World War II and, like, dealing with Nazi issues.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And that just the cartoon alone where all the Nazis get jetpacks and fly over here and take over and our capital burns. It's like, that's eerie. And
yeah, that's a lot to deal with. Yeah. And then, like, the villain burning up in flames and just... Yeah. Like so many people crashing an airplane. Like there's just so many images that they would keep away from kids nowadays.
Even that first plane crash that Billy Campbell, aka Cliff, Cliff Secord that he has. I remember as a kid that's a nerve wracking thing where the mobsters. We'll just talk about this real quick, then we'll get into the plot. But the mobsters in the beginning, what a bunch of dicks! Like he's just flying over and they're being chased by the feds, so they just shoot. They just shoot at his plane for no reason.
Right.
It's like, what do you do to you guys?
I don't know.
And then that's in that moment where the oil bursts in his face and he has to bust the windshield open.
Yeah.
That's some intense stuff.
That's terrifying.
And he has a harrowing landing where like the one wheel breaks off and then the other one, he's just skidding and they're like, get me out of there. Get me out. And the whole thing's on fire. And then he goes back for the picture of Jennifer Connelly. Holy crap. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, she is gorgeous now, but like, this, like, she looks like a 1940s.
She really does. Yeah.
That's what I love when they get the period right, when, like, everybody looks
he
like...
Look, he means the era.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. What?
Just when you were discussing Jennifer Connelly and you said they get the period right, and I just wanted to make sure everyone knew that you were talking about the
time. In
case
anybody got confused. When that's the thing with period pieces, especially, like, she has curves to her, she looks gorgeous, she has that look, she looks like a classy lady from the 1940s, and I love their romance together. I'm just, maybe because I was kind of a prude kid growing up, mm-hmm. I love that kind of like chaste, like adorable romance that they have in this movie, and I miss that kind of quality. That's actually what I loved about the first Captain America, directed by Joe Johnston as well, with like Peggy Carter and Steve Rogers have such a great relationship, and it kind of reminded me of that, you know. But anyways, I could ramble about this forever, which luckily we have 39 minutes still, but let's do the plot in under 3 minutes first.
Okay.
And are we ready in the booth, Steve? Which means you're not ready, so next time don't lie to me and say yeah,
trust has been broken.
Oh god,
oh boy.
So we start off on the airstrip there. It's Alan Arkin, Billy Campbell, and the whole crew. They're getting ready to fly for the Nationals. They're going to fly in the Nationals. And they're taking this plane out. I don't know what the Nationals are,
nope.
But they keep mentioning it.
Nope.
They take this plane out, and he's having a great flight. And then out of nowhere, we cut to the feds. And they're chasing these two mob guys who have a case that says government property, whatever. They're shooting. They shoot up his plane. He crashes. The feds are like, screw you. It blows up a gas tank. Bigelow's like, well, you owe me for that, too, all right? So you got to do the clown act on Saturday. And you're like, what's a clown act? And then you find out later. But... Howard Hughes created the rocket pack. We find out that they swapped it in for a vacuum cleaner and torched it in the car. Boom.
Okay. Jennifer Connelly, he goes to pick up Jennifer Connelly. They go out on their date. She says, I got this audition for this movie. And he's like, oh, you're an extra again? Wah, wah, wah. She's like, no, I have a line this time. But then it turns out she didn't get the part. She's just an extra in the movie.
Yeah.
It's a Neville Sinclair movie who's like, he's the big movie star.
Great name, by the way.
It's a tremendous name. Billy Campbell is told that he has to be the clown, and he's like, oh, well, here's a plane.
Yeah.
And he goes and looks in the plane. He's like, what is this? This is a rocket pack. Let's hang on to this for a while.
Yeah.
And then they go back and they work on it a little bit. And
yeah, and then they introduce Timothy Dalton's character, and he's this swashbuckling kind of Errol Flynn type character, and you think he's just this Hollywood playboy. Later on, you'll find out he has nefarious tendencies, to say the least.
Sure.
And they set up that the Nazi blimp is going to fly over L.A. And, oh, my God, there's the big dude. They send out the big dude. I don't even know his name, but he's giant. It looks like a Dick Tracy character on steroids. Yeah. He goes in and he finds out. He's like, where is the rocket? And he breaks the guy in pieces. He, like, breaks all his bones, kills him. He goes and he kills Bigelow. And they start piecing it together. And then they find out that Jennifer Connelly is the girlfriend and that she knows
so,
him.
Yeah. So Billy Campbell goes to set and he, like, ruins the set. And they're like, get Jennifer Connelly out of here. And then so Billy Campbell's talking to Jennifer Connelly. And he's like, I found this thing. It's going to change our lives. It's going to make us some money.
And he's like, ooh.
And he's like, ooh. So I'm going to take Jennifer Connelly out on a date and try to get to Billy Campbell. So he finds Jennifer Connelly. They go to this exclusive restaurant, and Billy Campbell finds out that
they're at the diner.
They're at the diner, and the mob comes in.
The mob comes in. They get the mob out of there. Billy Campbell goes after her, pretends to be a waiter, gets her to leave, and then there's this shootout in the restaurant where he's flying around, crashing everything, torching everything. He goes through the stained glass window. We find out that Jennifer Connelly gets kidnapped again. Here we go. They go to the Griffith Park. She's hostage. She's saying, give me the rocket. The mob's there, and then Billy Campbell says, hey, you know, this guy's working for the Nazis. And even the mob goes, I don't work for no Nazis.
And then the Nazis come.
There's Nazi soldiers just come out of nowhere.
They come out of nowhere. And then the U.S. government comes out of nowhere. Yeah. And so
three-way shootout.
Yeah, and they all get on the blimp, and then there's a fight on the blimp.
12 seconds.
And then there's the
big guy chains himself.
Yeah.
And then so he gets caught and blows up.
He gives Neville the rocket pack, and the rocket pack blows up.
Moves the gun. Yeah. Pulls the gun. Boop.
And then Howard Hughes gives him an airplane.
Yay! I love that Howard Hughes is in this movie, by the way. And I love the actor that plays Howard Hughes.
It's such a weird, like, mixture of fiction and trying to do, like, an alternative reality.
When the guy with the glasses, the Nazi with the glasses, I thought he was supposed to be, like, Goebbels or somebody. Like, one of the top Nazi doctors or somebody. But he wasn't. He was just a yelly Nazi who gets kicked out the window. Or shot out the window, I should say.
That guy, I feel like that guy's been in something.
Probably.
I mean, I'm sure he has, but I feel like I recognize him from something. And I spent probably a half an hour thinking about it.
During the entire third act.
I quit. Yeah.
So let's get into it. I love the setup of the chewing gum as the good luck.
Yeah.
Because when you've seen the movie, you know how awesome. Never has chewing gum paid off so well in a film ever.
No, nor has it ever been attempted. Before.
And never has chewing gum been so strong as to hold a gas leak, a fuel leak in a rocket pack for two acts of a film.
Sure.
Because it happens pretty early on, and there's several jet rocketeering moments after said chewing gum is placed on.
It's an integral part of the plot of the film.
Love it.
It not only is it good luck, but it's logistically very important.
Yeah, it's very important, yes. So we already talked about the dickhead mobsters in the beginning, how they just shoot up his plane for no reason.
Yeah, like initially I was like, are they thinking that it's like a police copter? But then I was like, no, there were no police copters.
They're just being assholes.
They're just shooting people.
They're just like, ah, fuck you too then! Hey!
Don't they know that people are preparing for nationals?
Yeah, come on.
Like, can't you just let someone
so
prepare?
Funny. They keep bringing up nationals, and I don't understand, A, when they do the actual plane race, was that a thing where planes, like, raced in a circle like NASCAR?
How dangerous did that seem?
That's super dangerous. Like, and people are just like, yeah! And it's like, I get nervous at Cirque du Soleil shows, like, when trapeze artists are above me, let alone when full-on planes are.
This is the reason we have air traffic control,
yes.
So that, like, this sort of shit doesn't happen.
Dangerous. I think it started, actually, because of nationals.
Yeah.
There's a few too many accidents at nationals.
Too many... National prepping accidents.
Oh, then Howard Hughes is introduced. He created the rocket pack. What is your first clip you have?
Oh, so the first clip was
after
Billy Campbell's plane gets shot in the very beginning, and it sort of starts swerving back to the airstrip where they started. And the
Alan
scientist,
Arkin.
Yeah, Alan Arkin,
who's called Peavy, and I think his name's Uncle Peter or something, but they call him Peavy, and it's very confusing.
I refer to him as the old dude.
I'm fairly certain they never give the big man a name. I'm just going to call him Giant Dick Tracy character. I got to think of a better name.
We'll workshop it.
Clip number one, please. Wait for it.
Something right.
Yeah. I mean, you're right about that.
Alan Arkin's so good in this movie because he has first off, there's a ton of famous people in this movie.
Yeah.
Tons. And Alan Arkin has that great deadpan delivery in the most desperate of times in this. Like, this plane's like going...
With smoke billowing out of it.
Just, this is his reaction.
Something ain't right.
You know, it's I think here we go. I'm pretty sure that there has to be one speechwriter for Trump who's trying really hard to get him to stay on message. And I just imagine them backstage every time, like, oh, good, he's talking unity. Oh, good, he's not talking his vile, awful, disgusting stuff. Yes, just keep on. And then as soon as he veers into the crowd size, you know the speechwriter's just going,
something ain't right.
And then, sure enough, well, there's very... Imagine if the mafia guy at the end was like, oh, you're working for the Nazis? I hear there's very fine people.
I'd love to hear their side of the story.
I'd love to hear their side of the story.
Seem very misunderstood.
The mafia, we'll get to that, but the mafia guy even knows what's up.
It's interesting that you should bring that up, because I heard that when Trump is reading the teleprompters and he starts seeing things about, like, the country becoming united and... how Nazism is bad, he thinks to himself.
Some main right.
And he's like, "What? Who wrote this? Minute. Who the fuck wrote this?
Who wrote this? I specifically said, I want to, oh my God.
We had specific discussions about what was going to be in my speech, and it was going to be about how great I am.
You know, after seeing the Nick Cage clip of him just punching several puritanical style women in the face, I just kind of I started to wonder about Nick Cage, and I thought,
something ain't right.
And then I saw the bees scene. I don't know if you've seen that infamous scene where he's just like, oh God, what is that? What is that? And they put a helmet on him and they just shove bees in his helmet, and he just starts yelling, oh, the bees, the bees. And then I was definitely like,
something ain't right.
The guy's a ball full of crazy.
I read a headline. I didn't read the article, although maybe I should.
How often does that happen?
So
in your
often.
Life?
But it's,
I feel like we're a headline society. We're like, yeah.
Oh, that
got it. Got the story.
Gist, got the gist. But this was not something where I felt like I had to read the full article, although I might double back and do it. But it was about Nicolas Cage having to return like a stolen artifact to the country of Mongolia or something like that. And so I read that headline and I was like,
something ain't right.
That definitely needs further research.
Yeah.
That's worth further research.
I bookmarked it.
By the way, I don't know if you've noticed, we're in the champagne room today of Popcorn Talk.
We sure are.
There is no champagne in the champagne room. And
as Chris Rock famously said.
And but there are sparkly dangly things. So try not to get distracted by the sparkly dangly bejeweled background we have. It's my favorite studio to be in.
Although right on the other side of this wall, if you walk through there, you can meditate.
Yeah.
Which is
nice. Yeah, it's great. It's
a lot of fun.
There's some incense burning right now. It's fantastic.
Definitely.
What is the Dream is Over clip? What's that one?
So that's...
Jesse pulled sound clips for me this week because I was dad duty.
No, I pulled sound clips for us.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
We're a team here. This is when Howard Hughes has decided that we're not making this rocket pack again. I didn't realize you were going to use it for nefarious purposes, and I'm out of this game.
I almost said Howard Stark. Howard Hughes is like Howard Stark. That's what Howard Stark was based on. Tony Stark's father was based on Howard Hughes. But I love the idea of him being like, as soon as the government wanted it as a weapon, I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
If only more people did that nowadays.
Can you imagine?
Did you have any other cue up for it, or should we just play it?
Let's hear it.
Clip number two.
Tell him the dream is over. Tell him Howard Hughes said so.
Tell him
it's so good. That's how we find out that he's Howard Hughes.
That is. Because up until then, you're like, man, he's just a guy with a cool mustache and a nice voice.
Yeah.
Tell him Howard Hughes said so.
Howard Hughes said so.
So good. So good. I think, actually, Leonardo DiCaprio used this performance as a basis for his portrayal of Howard Hughes in The Aviator. Because you can't top this one. But he tried. And he would have a tape recording. You know, like how... that SNL sketch where park the car in the Harvard Yard is how you get into a Boston accent. This is how he would get into Howard Hughes. So he would just sit there, you know, just backstage or while rehearsing and just playing it over and over in his head. Just
tell him the dream is over. Tell him Howard Hughes said so.
And I think it worked.
You know what I heard? Is that Leonardo DiCaprio was so confident for The Aviator that he was going to win Best Actor that he went up to all the other nominees, looked him right in the face, and said,
tell him the dream is over. Tell him Howard Hughes said so.
Little did he know, all he had to do was almost freeze to death and eat a raw bison liver.
Fight a bear.
Yeah. I love The Revenant. That's a great movie, though. Anyways, okay, we're going to keep moving on. So Howard Hughes comes out. Timothy Dalton is like, practicing his sword fighting, which before then you don't really know why he's doing it. He's just like still in wardrobe.
I wrote a big question mark on my paper because I was like, what the fuck is happening right now? Why is this dude just sword fighting?
He's like
fighting
the Daniel Day-Lewis of the 30s, where
that makes sense.
He's just always in character because as later on he adopts a German accent, so you're like, oh, he's been that's a long con.
Long con.
So he's a German pretending to be a British film star.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
No one Googled him?
No. The 30s. Nobody sent a raven to find out?
Yeah.
Those are super fast, as Game of Thrones taught me.
As we know.
Anyway, so I did write, Jennifer Connelly is gorgeous. Yeah, I was smitten with her, as you can tell.
She is. They also, like, sort of do the thing where she's not an important... Like, her character is not important, only, like, her placeholder is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a little unfortunate. That's what I remember, especially I'll jump to the end where the two guys are fighting and she's just kind of like, until a gun is kicked her way. And I'm glad that for the most part, not for the most part, but there's a good majority of movies that come out that have done away with that cliche.
Yes.
Because to me, there's nothing more boring. I get it that this takes place in a time period where it was kind of more the damsel in distress time period,
mm-hmm.
where that was more... the way those films were made, especially in the 30s and 40s, tied to railroad tracks and the mustache twirling bad guys. So it was kind of hearkening back to old serials for The Rocketeer. I get that. But I'm glad that cliche is slowly... I hope it quickly dies.
Sure.
Because nothing... Even the trailer for The Mummy, I didn't see it. But when the girl's like, I'm so scared. And he's like, it's going to be all right. And you're like, God damn it. Why is the woman always freaked out? Because in most shitty situation, like in most... stressful situations between my wife and I, I'm the one going, oh, fuck! And my wife's like, it's cool. It's almost always the opposite, where I'm like, and my wife's like, hey, we got this.
And sometimes you have bad dreams, and your wife wakes you up by saying, sound clip number two.
Tell him the dream is over. Tell him Howard Hughes said so.
We have very weird... very weird role play. Yeah, you know, she dresses up as Howard Hughes.
Sure.
I dress up as Angelica Houston from Witches.
That's a choice.
Super strange.
That's a choice.
That's a choice. Anyways, we'll keep moving on. So they bring in the big guy. Like I said, he looks like Al Pacino's character from Dick Tracy, but like stretched out and broadened like a... I don't know. And his voice, we talked about how Optimus Prime's voice doesn't match his actions. This guy's voice, I don't know, did we pull a sound clip of him? I don't think so, but he looks like he'd be like, I'm gonna kill you. But instead it's like, where is the rocket? And it never matches with his mouth. His mouth just kind of goes, here, you do the voice. And
where is the rocket?
There we go. That was good. We should do that more often. We should plan that next time.
All right, excellent.
But it's because he's behind all these prosthetics. But man, his character's super creepy. And just like, he's the guy they call as the enforcer. Actually... who somehow, he must be like a Nazi agent because Neville Sinclair calls him in, not even the mob. Where does this guy come from? I want a whole prequel for this guy.
He's like a Nazi Jason Bourne, where he is sort of unaffiliated, but he's a weaponized human soldier. And they call on him when they need him, and he shows up and does the job.
He's like a giant hat-obsessed Captain America, because he's obsessed with his hat. Every time his hat blows off, it is very, very disturbing to him.
I wonder if that was a choice, or if the actor was like, oh, now my face is going to come off.
Maybe.
Like, he was a little bit worried about
makeup,
that. Yeah.
The makeup just stops here, and it's like, ah, shit, we got to cover that back up.
Cut.
That's so good. So I love the fact that the one guy who's injured in the beginning, that scene in the hospital freaked me out so much as a kid, where he's like, where is the rocket? Where did you hide it? And then you just hear his screams, and it starts on the radio, and then the cop and the nurse realize, oh shit, it's really happening, and then he's just hanging there all twisted up. You could never get away with that in a kid's movie. You could never get away with insinuating breaking every bone in a man's body and twisting him up like a pretzel.
Mm-mm.
Maybe PG-13.
Yeah, but then there would be a lot more stuff. Like, they wouldn't just have that.
There's something I really love about the balls of 80s and early 90s kids' movies, like Gremlins, this, Goonies, where they had like this. That's why Stranger Things works so well, because they have this kind of like ballsy approach to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the idea that like, if you don't see it, then we don't have to account for it.
Yeah,
but like, if you see the aftermath of it, that's nearly as bad as seeing the actual thing
but
happen.
I feel like it also kind of, even though it scared me as a kid, I also then the heroics are that much more. There's that much more of a
stakes.
Payoff.
Yeah.
There's stakes in this movie. Even though it is a kid's movie, there are stakes.
Right.
And I feel like you lose that sometimes. And I think that I'm not advocating violence in kids' movies, but a little bit more realism, because I feel like it kind of established in my head, like, that much more rooting for the good guy.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyways, what else did we want to do? So they test this out for the first time. They attach it to a statue, and it just goes in a circle. And then I love how it shoots up into space, like, looks like out of the hemisphere, thousands of miles
up.
Gone
forever.
Gone forever. And then somehow magically just boomerangs around and comes right behind them, and they have to run away from it.
And they run in a straight line away from it.
What? Somebody needs to tell fictional characters that
you can zigzag.
You can zigzag.
Zigzag, man.
Just tell Charlize Theron in Prometheus. You can zigzag away from that spaceship.
Right. You don't have to run straight.
You don't have to
run straight. But it's funny to me that they just, like, put a stake down into the ground.
For a jetpack.
To try and tie down the jetpack.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, fingers crossed.
Hope this works.
Yeah.
Now, when they get the statue, they realize, oh, that was really awesome. We need to try a human flight, but we might need one very specific thing, because the head has been broken off completely. And we're talking about a statue, it's tough to break one, I would assume.
I try all the time. I constantly am trying, and I can't
just
do it.
Break statues.
I'm very strong.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I know. You're very strong. Can we play clip number 3?
I think we're going to need a helmet.
You know, I had a similar incident when I was riding my bike.
Uh-oh.
And I had one of those things where, when I was a kid, I had a BMX bike that had, like, the shield on the front, because I thought, and it said, like, Viper or something. I thought it looked really cool.
Yeah.
And all my buddies were going down this dirt hill that then led to my neighbor's hill driveway. And I saw them just coast down and just look real sweet. And so I was like, I'm going to go even faster than them. And I didn't realize that going downhill on a rocky dirt terrain, you don't need to pedal more. It'll just make it awful for you.
Yeah.
So I started pedaling, and literally the wheel started going like this, and I flipped over the front, and I toppled down the dirt hill and down the pavement. Luckily, I just jammed both wrists, and I got cuts everywhere, but I didn't hit my head.
Yeah.
But the second I went home, my mom and dad looked at me, and they were like,
I think we're going to need a helmet.
And I don't know if you've noticed my head size. It is gigantic. So when you put a helmet on top of it, that's not a moon. That's a space station. That's what it looks like. My head looks giant already, but then you put a helmet on it. I had a mushroom-shaped one, and I looked like Toad from Super Mario Brothers.
We'll be sharing pictures of that.
We will. We'll be tweeting
Guilty
it out.
Movie Guys.
At Guilty Movie Guys.
I went whitewater rafting every summer when I was
really?
Younger.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
And we would go to, like, West Virginia and Pennsylvania, and they made us sign a waiver every time. And my first year, I, like, went and showed up, and I was like, I don't need a life jacket. I don't need a helmet. They're like, you have to have a life jacket. You have to have a helmet. And I was like, I don't want it. And they made us sign the waiver, and the waiver literally says, not following these instructions could result in death or worse. That was the exact language.
Death or worse?
Death or worse. And I read that, and I was like,
I think we're gonna need a helmet.
Yeah.
Yeah, rightfully so.
For real.
What's worse?
Don't know. They didn't explain it.
Oh, Jesus.
Left to your imagination. I think being folded in half in a hospital bed.
So there's, I think another thing this movie does great is the character development, the relationships. Like, I love the relationship between Peavy and Cliff and Jenny. I think they're all really well developed, and I like the fact that you pulled a sound clip with kind of PV being razzed by Cliff about not dating, and what does he know? So let's play that one real quick. Clip number 4.
Well, what do you know about women, Peeve? You hadn't had a date since 1932.
Which, didn't this take place in, like, it was 38, right?
I think 39.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That is a long time.
It's a long time.
And then he says, like, some name, like Florence Hexler.
He says the name, and then we go into, like, nostalgia music, and then we never go back to that. We, like, never revisit, like, PV's love life.
I would have loved for her to come back in the end and be like, here, you're the man who helped the Rocketeer.
Yeah, or if he had just gone back and been like, that's because I'm married. Yeah. Why would I be going on dates?
Where's your wife? It looks like you two, like, live in the same house, sort of.
Yeah.
Like his uncle.
She's the waitress downstairs.
Yeah. Where's Cliff's parents?
I don't know.
Who knows? I mean, he's a grown man. He doesn't... He maybe
still
moved away.
I mean...
They still exist.
Presumably they still exist. Yeah.
He had them at some point.
At some point. He was cared for as a young man.
Yes. So let's go to the set, which is awesome to me, because they have the world's worst actress, who is the producer's niece or something like that, which a lot of us have seen in movies before. Mm. So can we play clip number 5? This is the director trying to explain acting to this young lady.
Listen, sweetheart, acting is acting like you're not acting. So act, but don't act like you're acting, get it?
All right.
Why don't we try that?
That was actually the direction on my very first commercial shoot. They were like, act like you're not acting.
Acting is acting like you're not acting. So yeah. Act like you're not acting.
In fact, I think we should just play that clip again because it's pretty much the greatest acting advice ever. So any young actors out there, if you're looking for where to begin, this is a pretty darn good place.
Listen, sweetheart, acting is acting like you're not acting. So act. But don't act like you're acting, get it?
All right.
Why don't we try that?
Act. But don't act like you're acting. Why don't we try that? So good.
And then her response,
And then she does okay. Try that. She does okay.
She nails it the second time.
Until Cliff knocks over the scenery and nearly kills Neville Sinclair.
Yep.
Harrowing. Which, I don't know about you, but maybe this subconsciously put the seed in my head, but anytime I'm on a studio lot and I'm walking backstage ready to go on set or something, or like say hi to somebody, whatever it may be, and I'm moving past those fake sets, I'm always a little nervous about being the guy who knocks everything down and like injures the main lead of it. Don't do it.
Don't be that guy. Although
peer through the cracks.
They like do a pretty good job.
Just go to Video Village.
Sandbagging the sets now.
I think they're much.
they're not just like standing straight up.
That was literally just like, all right.
Well,
that's it.
We need another set.
It was like not.
Is no one securing this?
Or there was no securing on the front or back. It just was like precariously placed up there.
They like balanced it and they were like, we're going to do a fight scene, but we're not going to secure our walls.
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
Really hope for the best.
And
here.
Then they fire Jenny when it's like, that's not her fault. Yeah. And that's not his fault that there was such poor construction. Fire the construction guy, set designer.
Also not her fault that there's no security, not letting people in a closed set.
How did he get on a studio lot?
Right.
This is, you know,
2 steps. You have to get on the lot and then you have to get into the stage.
You do. And they just drop the ball on
security
both of
those. Both places.
So this is when Neville Sinclair overhears Cliff talking about the rocket and he's like, oh, I'm going to get this. And they design the helmet and they're doing, this is before the first major flight of the Rocketeer. He goes out and he flies around and he like crashes into the lake and all that stuff. And it's just is it the first time he ever flies it when he has to save Malcolm?
He has to save Malcolm.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. So they're going to do the national. I don't know if this is the nationals. I think this is the pre-nationals.
This is not nationals.
Not nationals.
No.
And they're doing the plane race like we talked about. And Cliff isn't there yet. Malcolm gets in the clown outfit and starts flying. He hasn't flown in like 30 years.
Which I also don't understand what they need. Why there's a clown?
Because you can't see
in a plane. You can't see it.
Doesn't make any sense. So he starts like. Crash, he starts flying all out of control. He's going to hit the other racers. Again, very dangerous to let a clown act go up when there's 5 planes racing, but
yeah,
hey, they didn't care back then. And so he dons the Rocketeer suit. He has that moment, that heroic moment where he's like, I'm going to risk my life to save Malcolm. And then the first thing he does is shoot up right underneath him, and then the gear stick flies out and hits Malcolm in the head and knocks him out.
Whoops.
Whoopsie-daisy. So, you know, a little bit of a botched rescue. But I love the fact that when he saves him, it's this really cool rescue sequence. The effects, for the most part, kind of live up still.
Mostly. Yeah.
When he's just flying, it looks kind of cheesy, but when he's actually on the plane, it looks really good.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that once he saves Malcolm, even though Otis Bigelow has asked for the his gas truck to be moved as far away from the field as possible, the plane still hits it and blows it up.
Yeah.
I love that callback. Oh, it's my favorite. It's so good. But then they say about the helmet, when that Peavy's designed, there's a little bit of a snarky response to it. Can we play clip number 6?
How do I look?
Like a hood ornament.
Like a hood ornament. Helen Arkin.
Yeah, I mean, you made it.
Yeah. Why are you being so snarky?
Yeah. This is your fault.
This is your design.
You did this. Just because Billy Campbell has no parents.
And your Uncle Peavy.
Doesn't mean you can treat him this way.
Yeah, come on. Get out of here. So, he does this whole flying thing. He saves Malcolm. Then he goes out of control. He slams through a woman. Doesn't punch a woman like Nick Cage, but he slams through her laundry. Gets the sheet in his face. Ends up flying through a cornfield. And the guy goes, "That's some gopher." Which I love that line. And it's just going. Then he hits the lake. He skids like a skipping stone. Crashes into the mud. Uncle Peavy comes by, and his reaction after this harrowing experience, and I think I've said harrowing like 700 times, but it's the word of the day. Ah! Anyways, that was my Pee Wee Herman. Can we play clip number 7?
I like it.
He does.
Very enthusiastic.
He really likes it.
I will also say that the number one in a vehicle out of control gag is when you drive through a laundry, like a clothesline, and get laundry all over you. That's my favorite.
It's my favorite.
And they do it all the time, and I love it.
And my second favorite is when they drive through a cornfield, and they do both.
They do both back in the same exact sequence.
Back to back in the same sequence. Wonderful. It's so good. Can we play that again?
I like it.
I just, you know what? Every time I leave Guilty Movie Pleasures, mm-hmm. I just shake my head and I go,
I like it.
You know what? I do it for the love.
Isn't that just the truth?
That's what I do.
I was sharing a slice of cake
mm-hmm.
with my lovely wife, and she took a bite and she was like, I love this. And I took a bite and I was like,
I like it.
But you're still enthusiastic.
I was still enthusiastic. Like, just because I don't love it doesn't mean I don't like it. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are shades of gray in there.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I get it. You're preaching to the choir here.
Good.
You're preaching to the choir.
It's unanimous.
So I skipped around a little bit, and Mr. Bigelow's now dead in the plot where we're at. He gets broken in half.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Mr. Bigelow. Otis Bigelow. And then I love that the villain, the big guy, shows up. He starts slamming Cliff's. This is where it gets a little Disney, but it's fine because I love it. Is where he's slamming Cliff's head through the softest ceiling ever. And the same spot. You would think he'd go, crack, slam through another spot, crack. But he's like, nope, I'm going to keep.
Well, he already made some headway.
Yeah, you know, he's just seeing how far up in the drywall he can get.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Sorry, I really didn't.
That's why you're here.
I really didn't.
You bring the highbrow.
I take it back.
I bring the lowbrow.
Don't forget I said anything.
No, I'm not going to forget. And then the FBI show up. And, well, first off, the big guy, I love that he's like, where's the rocket? And it's hiding under a lampshade.
They put the rocket in such precarious position.
Like, they put it in the laundry bag. It's like, guys, this is a very expensive,
it's so
top
important.
And you're just willy-nilly hiding it like Spider-Man hides his book bags.
Actually, like, don't hide it. Just hold on to it.
Yeah, keep it.
Like, keep it on
keep
you.
It at all times.
God.
That's what I would do.
They're just so casual with it.
Then there's the shootout to end all shootouts where the FBI shows up at Peavy's place and the big dude starts opening fire. So the FBI just mows down in their house. Somehow not hitting the biggest man I've ever seen in my life.
Not hitting anyone.
Gigantor. They can't hit Gigantor.
They couldn't hit him, and they couldn't hit the two people escaping.
Nope.
It's just
everyone
unscathed.
But later on, when the mob's in the diner, two shots into the ceiling hits the rocket pack.
Well,
so, you know, it's just the law of averages. Eventually, somebody hits something.
Weapons were less accurate back then. I don't think they were trying to hit the rocket pack when they were shooting
exactly.
up. So that's why they hit it.
Tommy guns apparently had no accuracy.
You know what's much more accurate than Tommy guns is a statue with a rocket pack on it.
It is. It
that
is like a homing missile.
Yeah.
It is. So then Jenny's schmoozing with Neville, and then creepy W.C. Field shows up and scopes out her boobs in a very, and again, probably couldn't get away with a boob shot in a kid's movie nowadays. They full on
like
pan down.
For real, pan down and just boobs in the frame.
I was like,
well
played. All right. So what is our next clip? What's I Hear Music?
I Hear Music.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, so he's trying to
that's
get her
when
to
he's,
dance.
Yeah, because he's trying to put the moves on.
Laying it on thick.
To find out where this rocket is.
Right.
And then meanwhile, the mob is at the diner, strong-arming them there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I forget, how do they get out of the mob? They break they're dicks. They come in, they shoot a plane in the beginning, they break a pie rack.
Yeah, and they throw the coffee pot.
They throw the coffee pot, they shoot the radio.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really, really rude. They punch. Cliff full on punches the one dude, and then five of the old timers get the gun, and then they shoot the rocket. That's what happens. The rocket pack gets shot then.
Yep. So there are two of the mafia guys find out that Jennifer Connelly is at the restaurant. So they go there and they leave two to stay with.
And then they call her number.
Yep.
And then when they call her number, the girl at the girls' dormitory is like, she's not here. She's at the South Seas Club.
Yep.
So they go there, and then because now the mob's thinking that Neville is pulling a fast one on him. Little do they know he's a hidden Nazi, and that's the ultimate fuck you, dude.
Kind of.
But just not for our president. So then the
Nazi.
I Hear Music, that's when he's schmoozing up Jenny. Can we play the I Hear Music again?
I Hear Music.
You know, a similar thing happened to me when I was not being schmoozed by Neville Sinclair, but when I was lighting
off fireworks.
When I was lighting off fireworks as a kid on the 4th of July, I went to throw a black cat, and I didn't realize how short the fuse was. And true story, I brought it back here, and it blew up next to my ear. And I for the next, like, 3 days, I was just like,
I hear music.
And they're like, you sure it's not just ringing? And I'm like, yes, it's just ringing.
It's amazing you're not dead from the two stories you just told us.
Yeah,
that's phenomenal.
I was almost like Baby Driver for the rest of my life.
we had a ice cream truck that would come around probably like once a month in our neighborhood. And it always had the Entertainer playing. So I would like be home over the summer and I could hear it from forever away.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd start to hear it play and I'd like perk up. And I'd run to my mom, and I'd ask for a dollar, and she'd be like, why, what's up? And I'd be like,
I hear music.
Oh, I'm so jealous that the ice cream truck came in your neighborhood, because my childhood, the ice cream truck would drive down the main street and pass us every summer.
What?
Yeah. And so to this day, as an adult, whenever an ice cream truck comes by...
You still get it?
I run and go get it. Unless my wife adamantly says, no, you can't go over there. We're walking the dog and your daughter. I mean, it is overpriced, and I could just get the same thing at a gas station.
No, but it's not in a truck. That doesn't make sense.
It's not in a truck.
Why would you go to a gas station when it's a truck?
Steve, do we have any more time than what's on the clock, or is that our hard out? Yeah, maybe give us like 5 more minutes. Okay. Thank you. Because I want to make sure we cover this. I've been having fun. It's fun to like talk about a movie that I genuinely love and don't have a whole lot to.
And let me just say this. Not all the movies we cover are guilty to us,
or specifically
to you guys. Like, the term guilty movie pleasure is a subjective term. Like, everyone has their own threshold for what
there's
they feel guilty about.
For sure.
Yeah. So we try and cover movies across the whole spectrum.
And sometimes it's fun to cover things that we remember as a kid to revisit it and see if it's guilty now. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any guilt to this for me. I don't feel guilty at all watching this. Especially when I put my mindset as like a kid nowadays watching this would probably still be just as blown away, I would assume.
I'm going to tell the most judgmental people I know that I like this movie.
There you go.
That's how little guilt I feel.
Yeah. We like to cover a broad basis. So Cliff shows up at the restaurant and he pretends to be a waiter and he hides a note in the soup, which is very clearly there for a very long time before he dumps the tomato soup
also,
in.
Also, I would love to go to a place where they bring the bowl out
pre-soup and just slather
and
it in.
Yeah, and then pour the soup table side.
But before that, he's hidden the rocket pack in a laundry bag, and I was like, what if somebody comes and finds that?
Yeah, what if they're
doing?
What if they do laundry?
What if they actually do the laundry here? But I guess that just shows the cleanliness of this place. So there's, Michael Scott's wife from The Office is the jazz singer, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the woman who played his, I think might be Steve Carell's wife in real life, is the jazz singer in this movie. She was major character in The Office. And I was like, I know her. And I looked her up and I was like, holy crap, that's awesome.
You know, the waitress in the diner is, I hope I'm remembering her first name, but it's Margot Martindale,
who's
on The Americans and is on
bunch
of TV now. Yeah.
There's many people in this movie. It's fantastic. And you got James Bond himself with Timothy Dalton.
Yeah.
So they go to the South Seas Club. He gets her to go meet her under the bushes and says, hey, Neville's bad guy, blah, 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 all this stuff. And then he tries to escape and
Before that, it's my favorite moment of the movie.
I'm trying to remember where we are.
When they're like covered by the plants and he's like, I want to tell you this right now. I'm the Rocketeer. And she's like, what?
The Rock-a-who?
Yeah. She's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, the Rocketeer. Have you read the papers? It's the flying guy. And she's like, I've been busy. It's so good.
It's
the best.
I wish that happened more often.
Yeah.
You're right. That is a great moment.
Yeah.
So then, he goes back to the laundry room and he's chased back there by the mob and they start shooting at him. And so he rockets into the laundry chute, which then rockets him. Wait, he goes to the laundry chute and then somehow he ends up in the South Seas Club on like a dinner cart.
He goes to like the ladies' lounge. Yeah, and like flies through the ladies' lounge.
Yeah. Oh yeah, because that would make sense. The towels come from the ladies' lounge to the laundry. So he goes up there, then he's flying around on the cart and he's just causing havoc. Then he starts flying and he crashes into the clamshell and like pins one of the I think the why can't I remember it? The The orchestrator guy.
The conductor?
Conductor. Thank you. God, mm-hmm. I lost that word in my brain. I have the best words, just not today. he gets pinned in there. He's causing havoc. They got him dead to rights. And then he looks up, stained glass, you know, awesome Pantheon-style ceiling. Shoots up. He thinks Jenny's safe. Nope. Neville scoops her up.
Well, because she keeps, like, doubling back.
Yeah.
She keeps going out and then, like, running back for something. Yeah. She, like, go to the Kochek and then...
Kind of one of those things that, the cliche, like, we talked about, where it's like, she makes several bad decisions that gets her kidnapped by a Nazi.
Yeah.
Which we don't know yet. That's a crazy reveal to have, like, third act of a movie when it's like, oh, she... I love... But this is a great moment for her to give this movie credit, where she pretends like she's into him, and he's, like, kissing her neck, and she's like, oh, and she goes in the bathroom, and she's like, can you help me with this? And you're like, damn, I was convinced even. I was like, is she going to bone this guy? What a dick. And then she picks up the flower vase, cracks him over the head in the best, like, pratfall ever. It's just like, kush.
And he's like, lights out.
Lights out immediately. And we have this sound clip, clip number 9.
I finally played a scene with Neville Sinclair.
Yes. Because up until then, she's been just a background actress.
Yeah, she got her own mic drop line.
She did. There. That's a mic drop line, for sure. Or a flower vase drop line, for sure.
Yep.
I love that moment. So then she sneaks into another room and finds a radio.
Which is also great, because she, like, finds a bookcase and she's immediately like, there's definitely a hidden room.
I don't know about you, but I don't go to many bookcases and go,
where's the hidden book? Yeah.
Yeah, so that was pretty fantastic. And then she finds a radio and starts a radio out, and then there's a German voice, a German accent, dialogue, everything on the other side. He's like, Das Wieden Guten Tagen, Vrugen Fragen.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, no. And then he realizes he's a Nazi. And that's when we go to Howard Hughes, where the Rocketeer is arrested. He goes in there, and we find out that Peavy's been helping Howard Hughes fine-tune his airplanes and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hughes reveals the huge Nazi plan that we talked about, this crazy propaganda cartoon that probably gives Trump a Woody. sorry, I'm losing my voice.
You have a hard time saying Woody. I understand that. It's like, as soon as you say it...
So the cartoon happens. It's an eerie, creepy cartoon of these Nazis with rocket packs flying everywhere, which, while I was thinking about it, I was like, why don't they just fly over in planes? But I guess it'd be harder. The logic would be it's harder to shoot down thousands of rocket packs.
Listen, why don't you fly over the wall and use a dragon to burn all the White Walkers when you could just send a group on foot to do the same thing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You understand
what
I'm saying?
Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen...
No, I'm just asking questions.
Oh, yeah. Are you caught up?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, anyway, I hope everybody's caught up.
That was a question I asked before this last episode, by the way.
Yes, so, I mean, that's what I've asked for the rest of, since the beginning. So then they go to Griffith Park. There's the standoff between Cliff and Neville, and he has Jennifer Connelly there with the gun to her head, and the Mafia's there. And then Cliff, smartly, because he knows that all Americans can agree on one thing, at least in this movie, that Nazis are bad.
Yep.
And so he starts egging him on, saying, hey, Neville's a Nazi, by the way. I bet you didn't know that. And what does the Mafia guy... This guy kills people for a living.
He's a terrible human.
He's a terrible human.
But even he has a line.
And this is the line. Can we play clip number 11?
I may not make an honest buck, but I'm 100% American. And I don't work for no two-bit Nazi.
How great...
You tell him.
How great if after all the awful stuff that's happened in our country, if our president came out and said,
I may not make an honest buck, but I'm 100% American.
Well.
And I don't work for no two-bit Nazi.
But instead...
But he would follow that up by saying, I work for full-fledged... Full-fledged Nazis. No half-assed Nazis. Two-bits.
Those two-bits aren't very fine.
Yeah.
They're not very fine people. Oh, God. That was such a cool moment for me, where this Mafia guy, who's been a dangerous, threatening character, even he has a line of morality, which I love. I love when this is like with The Rock last year.
I was just going to say that,
where there's a line of morality that some villains won't cross. And apparently our president is the worst villain of all. He'll cross all those fucking lines.
He'll cross
enough about that. What was the clip, all of the above?
Oh, so this is when we find out that Neville is a Nazi, when she hears...
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
He, like, comes in the secret bookcase as well, and this is his response to her finding out. Clip number 10.
spy, saboteur, fascist. All of the above.
It's weird because I heard that that's the 2020 campaign slogan for Trump. Anyways, we got to keep moving on because I want to talk about the final battle scene on the blimp. It's awesome. So there's a shootout. A bunch of Nazi soldiers, not shoulders, with shoulders.
With shoulders.
Soldiers with shoulders both. Show up.
Soldiers
and
with
then,
shoulders.
The FBI shows up. There's a shootout. I love the moment where the mob boss looks down at the FBI agent and smiles because they're both shooting at Nazis.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah.
And so there's a shootout. The blimp comes by. The Nazi blimp, Zeppelin. The Nazi Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. They get on that. There's an awesome fight between Cliff and Neville on there. There's this badass fist fight.
So that's
fight.
The clip 12 is when Cliff punches Neville and Neville punches him back.
Where's your stunt man now, Sinclair?
I do my own stunts.
So good.
It's so good because he punches him and then Neville gets up and winds all the way up and just throws a haymaker with... Billy Campbell just, like, stands with his hands down, open to the punch.
Doesn't block.
Doesn't block, doesn't brace, doesn't, like, try and punch back. He's just like, all right, it's my turn, I guess.
Yeah. And I love the, when they throw out the... Oh, the best is the, So they're fighting... Before they get in there, the big guy's on the top of the Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. They have a fight there. He gets knocked down, and right as they're saying, we got the best pilot in all of Germany, the big guy comes in and slams and knocks him out the other window, like, seconds later. It's fantastic comedic timing.
It's great.
And then, long story short, there's this fist fight, and then he gives him the rocket. Jennifer Connelly fires a flare... Mm-hmm. In the Zeppelin, and it starts catching on fire. Terrible decision
Don't
on her
do
part.
Don't do
that.
That.
He gets the... Yep, okay, here we go. He gets the rocket. He gets the... You saw the gift that I posted. He gets the jetpack on. He moves the gum away before he hands it to Neville, and it full-on turns him into a fireball, and he crashes and destroys the Hollywood Land sign.
Yep.
And then they get to escape with Howard Hughes and Alan Arkin saving them.
They're on the
blimp as it's exploding.
As it's exploding, and they, like, have a moment. And I'm like, you're standing on a bomb!
Get off
the bomb!
Ah, I love it. It's such a great climactic fight, and a great... The explosions look insane. It's great. If you haven't seen this movie... You should watch it. If you haven't seen it in years, but you loved it as a kid, we'd love to know what you thought about it, revisiting it now. And also, give us some more suggestions. This was a suggestion. We love suggestions here. And until next time, where can they find you, Jesse? We got to wrap this up.
On Twitter and Instagram, at Too Much Jesse. For sketch, check us out at The Prom Losers.
All right, I'm at The Ben Begley on the Twitter and the Instagram. And at Guilty Movie Guys is where you can find us and talk all things guilty. And keep these suggestions coming. We love it, and we want to hear more from you. So keep it coming on the YouTube comments. We try to reply to each and every one of you.
We're
doing our best.
We're also looking into why the last one didn't post to a podcast.
Yes,
right?
We're going to find out why that isn't on iTunes.
Cool.
Until next time, what is your guilty movie pleasure?
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.